Hello, Internet.
It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hi.
Joining me this week are Dave.
Wait, I thought we weren't recording today.
Joining me this week are Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And joining me this week are Craig doing good thing.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. I'm not prepared.
You said you were ready.
I guess, I don't know. I feel a little bit bad, but my good thing this week are chocolate chip cookies. I
had That's a good one earlier. That's a really good thing.
They're really good.
That should make you feel better.
So, there you go.
That's it?
Yes, that's it. That's my
good What's your favorite cookie then, Mike?
Oh, gosh. This is really difficult because I mostly can't have cookies now.
That's why I felt bad, but...
I mean, chocolate chip is kind of... When I'm baking them, chocolate chip is my go-to. Mm-hmm. Love a peanut butter no-bake. Much to be said for in defense of brownies.
Definitely.
I mean, yeah. You know what? I'll even go for an oatmeal raisin if the mood strikes. Just as long as I don't think it's a chocolate chip cookie. then I'm fine.
Yeah, when they
that's
fool
the
you.
Worst
yeah,
thing. It's like, that's oh, so mean. Is this a chocolate chip and it's a oatmeal raisin? No, it's taste of disappointment. But if you're prepared, then that's okay.
Yeah, they should make cookies with raisinettes in them. So you're like, oh, I thought it was chocolate chip. And then you taste it, and first you taste chocolate, and you're like, okay, it is chocolate chip. But then, like, the raisin's even sneakier. That's inside the chocolate.
I have an oatmeal raisin recipe that we use for Star Wars parties because they're force cookies, because it's a chocolate chip raisin on the dark side and white chocolate craisin on the white side. You just use the same recipe but switch up the fillings.
Yeah, putting chocolate in some way into an oatmeal raisin does sound very good.
It is.
Yeah. But no, my kind of go-to now is like the lower sugar kind of stuff. Like that it's carby, but it's not necessarily sugary. Like animal crackers are actually really good.
I like animal crackers.
Yeah.
How about vanilla wafers? Is that in that category?
It is. I even have a box of them in my cabinet right now waiting for me to get hungry and snacky.
Oh, when I was a little kid, that was my favorite snacky dessert. Was you take vanilla wafers, little smear of peanut butter, and you make a little sandwich.
Yeah, those are good. The other big one that is kind of my go-to now is butter cookies in like the tin that may or may not contain sewing supplies.
Those are low carb.
Those are low sugar.
Oh, okay.
None of this is low carb.
My favorite is the pretzel shaped one with little. Is it not sugar? Like, it looks like there are little sugar pieces on it.
There is sugar on it. There's just not very much sugar per serving, and the serving size is pretty decent, so.
That's actually good to know, because a
it's good to know, because when you open that tin, you eat all the cookies.
I in fact, do and have.
I grab a sleeve, and I'm like, this is what I'm eating right now.
Yeah, but no, like, they're entirely carbs. They're nothing but carbs. All of these are, but... Yeah. The sugar portion of that is fairly low, especially compared to a lot of other sugary stuff. So,
yeah, I tried that once, but mine did have sewing supplies in it, so I was disappointed. It was like the oatmeal raisin of opening a tin of butter cookies.
It's like what people, they store the sewing supplies afterwards. It's like, oh, there's cookies there. No.
Someone who sews, those tins are so handy.
Are they compartmentalized?
No, not... No. It just has sleeves of, you know, paper sleeves for the cookies.
Mm. Well, paper cups.
Mm, yeah, thank you.
Like the Reese's ones, but not attached and taller.
Mm-hmm. Okay, side note. The cats are locked outside the room, and they're currently reaching their little paws under the door like an adorable zombie movie.
So you go up to it and you poke the paw. That's what you do.
Yeah, poke the little beans.
has new kitten acclimated to the new place and dogs
oh,
and
new
cat?
New kitten is fine.
Okay.
The other two are still like, this is not my beautiful house. And I think they're never going to forgive me. They're just going to be mad at me forever.
Well, get them really, really big suits to wear and they'll be fine.
All right. Moving on, Dave. What's your good thing?
Yeah, it's Dave's turn. Go, Dave.
I like Dutch fudge. Oh,
is that your good thing?
My good thing.
Are we all doing desserts? Is that it?
Actually, And my good thing this week is this mac and cheese I made right before recording. Sorry I was late, guys. But it's really yummy, and the secret is onion powder.
Mm.
I will pass.
Yeah, same.
I'm intrigued, though.
I'm glad you like it, but as I'm sure Craig can also attest, not liking onions is practically a disability. Everything has freaking onions.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Oh, Craig, you don't like ketchup or burgers or...
You don't notice. Ketchup has too much sugar, so...
Unless you make your own.
Everything you eat has onion powder in it in the United States. So, like...
I know. Dave, I'm aware.
It's like everything has onion and lettuce, and I hate it.
Lettuce is pointless.
Also, I will straight up just thin slice an onion and cook that thing, like caramelize that onion and eat the onion with nothing else.
Yeah, I could do that. I couldn't eat a raw onion by itself, but I could cook it and eat it on something. Or I could cook it and eat just, like, I could cook it and just have a side of caramelized onions.
You cook it? What you do is, so a little bit of oil in the bottom of the pan, put the onion in there, a little bit of soy sauce on top of the onion while it cooks.
Mmm.
Mm-hmm.
Neat.
Okay.
What's your favorite flavor mac and cheese, Craig?
Played from a box.
Okay, are we talking Velveeta box, Kraft box, like...
Seriously? My wife found this, like, powdered cheese, which the intention is it's supposed to make mac and cheese, like, classic Kraft mac and cheese. Like what I grew up with. Not the weird fake stuff that they have now. No, this is, like, from 1990, the nice Kraft mac and cheese. That's what it tastes like. I like that.
Is this just powder and you get it in bulk?
It's just a container, a big container of powdered cheese, like... Yay.
And the instructions are like, add one scoop to pasta, like...
No. She looked up a separate recipe for that. Okay. It's like, you add this... I mean, the classic mac and cheese recipe is just like, a tablespoon of butter, I don't know,
tablespoon of milk,
cup of milk.
Nope. Tablespoon of butter, tablespoon of milk, and cheese packet.
Yeah, so there you go.
What you're making is, you're skipping steps, but you're making a bechamel sauce.
Hmm.
Because the cheese powder actually has a little bit of flour in it, too, to thicken. It's, yeah.
Okay.
So normally you would go roux to bechamel, but, or, yeah. I may be using the wrong terms here and sounding like an idiot, like I often do.
But you guys know how I am with food. And the thing is, the more processed and fake something is, chances are I will like it better because I'm weird.
I am using the wrong terms. Bechamel is the milk sauce. When you add cheese, it's a mornay. Not to be confused with the eel that opens up and there's another eel in there. That's a moray.
That's xenomorph. Hey. Xenomoray?
I mean, you guys know the song, right?
Yes.
When the jaws open wide and there's more jaws inside, that's a moray.
The wife and I went to an Italian restaurant around town called That's a Moray. And right above their front desk is this huge mural with the lyrics to the actual song. And I can't see that and not think about the Moray eel version. Anyway, I think it's my turn.
Yes.
Sounds like it's my turn. Okay, so my good thing this week is the Reddit post that I posted today in Kremposts.
You can't eat that.
I could try. There's food words in here. In the world of Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn, half beard means goatee. I disagree. But Satchel Gizmo and Soup Can Sam was my first thought. And if you're unfamiliar, this is a like very late in the series thing. I think it extends to the movies. Sean and Gus each have half of a fake beard that they wear.
I remember that one.
I don't know that there is context to explain this and make it make sense because it was pretty silly in the show. But that's a half beard. I'm certain of it.
Yeah, I think that was our conclusion when we were discussing half beard. It's like, no. If I were to shave just this half, I could also go with a half beard. This weekend, I could go with a half beard.
And you should. It would be the fashion event of the century.
Dave and I shall go with the different side of the half beard so we can match Sean and Gus.
Yeah.
You know, when you posted something in our Cosmere Discord server, and I saw that it was about Psyche, I immediately thought it was going to be an Era 2 reference.
No, that's just us. I don't think anybody else has made that connection.
Well, hey, you can reply to that Reddit post with what I just said.
We could.
I could, and I might, and you could. Or Craig could.
No, I won't.
Yeah, Craig's our social media organizer, isn't he?
Craig was supposed to be in charge of Reddit.
That fell apart so fast.
I made you so many great posts, dude. You could have had so much karma.
As a fun exercise for the listeners out there, go to Reddit and see what all you can dig up on us there. And thank Craig for our presence.
We don't exist.
Don't do any of this.
But I think I'm done. I think it's Tori's turn now.
Okay. Well, I could talk about a food I enjoy.
Or brain food that you enjoy.
Or brain food. But okay, this is brain food. Like almost literally brain food. I started watching the anime Delicious in Dungeon.
Oh my God. I also started watching that. I started it yesterday.
She's like, you need to watch more.
It's so adorable.
Is that the one with the cute elf girl?
I guess.
Dave, you've narrowed it down to all animes. Like all of them.
Only the fantasy ones.
For those who don't know, this is about...
I think Dave would like it.
This is about an adventuring party. Like, sort of like you would find in a Final Fantasy game. Very first episode... They are fighting a dragon. Their healer gets eaten and teleports the party out to safety first. Well, the healer's brother is the party leader, and he's like, we gotta go back and save her before she's digested. And the rest of the party is like, but Laios, we have no money for supplies to go back in with. He's like, it's fine. We'll just eat the monsters that we destroy. And the rest of the party's like, Laios, no, but... This dwarf turns up named Sinchi, and he's like, well, yes, I've been surviving in the dungeon for years, and I can teach you how to cook that. So it's a cooking show that takes place in a dungeon.
It is wildly lucky that they run into that guy.
These
before
two
they
things
cook anything.
Should not work together, but they do, and it's so cute. And, I'm just over halfway through the part that's available on Netflix. That it says season one is on Netflix, and that season two is coming. But the first half of what's available on Netflix has a great opener by Bump of Chicken, which is one of my favorite Japanese bands. So that's also fun. Opening theme, very good. Never skip it. I always skip the closing thing because it auto-plays the next episode, so.
The episodes are formatted very specifically. So there is usually some sort of flashback, usually to another party who dies. Like, inevitably. They always die. There is a portion dedicated to them finding a monster and fighting it, and then there is a portion dedicated to cooking that monster into a delicious dish. That's the format of every episode.
I mean, they do veer away from that in later episodes, but yeah, that's pretty much the show. And when my friends were describing it to me, like, okay, cooking show, I was like, I don't like cooking shows, but it's super cute. I'm enjoying it very much.
And the art on the food, like, they go all out to make the food look really, like, Hayao Miyazaki... Studio Ghibli level food.
It's looking like an animated version of someone's Instagram page.
Yeah. Like the rest of the animation is pretty good, you know, ups and downs. It's animation in Japan. Like people are very, very good, but they're also under time crunches and there's only so much budget and et cetera, et cetera. But they pull out all the stops to make the food look good.
So that's my good thing.
Yay.
Meat.
So now we do the thing that I don't like.
White sand?
Yes.
No, it never ends.
Now we do. What?
So when I was listening to, and I have listened to older episodes, our big thing before the White Sand episodes were, we're never going to get the White Sand. And then we did. And now it's, we're never going to get out of White Sand.
Yeah, because sand is so hard to wash out. It gets everywhere.
It's coarse and it's rough.
Thank you, Mike.
I was thinking it's like a really annoying commercial. It's like you really hate it, but it's really doing its job because you remember it.
Forever. It just pops up when you least expect it.
It's like that scene on Inside Out where the guys are in the memory area and they're like, oh, let's just load up that old commercial. And
yep, there it is.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I have come to the conclusion, and this may shock you all, that reading these books 50 pages at a time is no good for me.
Well, you have to do this next Stormlight. Sorry, Mike.
There's only one Dave.
This is like, I'm so glad that Dave actually prefers reading at this pace, because this is, it's killing me, guys.
Mine is an evil laugh because I said that to start with. I was like, it's not gonna.
Like, just stick with it, Mike. You're almost there. We get like 3 more recordings over the course of the next 6 weeks. You're fine.
Yeah.
I need more time to play Subnautica, guys. This is great.
We're almost done with Sunlit Man, which has been actually quite good. I'm certain I would have enjoyed it quite a bit better if I could just power through the whole thing. I may have enjoyed Yumi a little bit more. I'm not sure. That book has some for sure flaws. But yeah, the way I'm reading is definitely bringing these books down a little bit.
I will say, as a person who's read these books already, it's much easier to do the 50 pages a week. Like, I know what happens.
Yeah.
I know what to expect. So I can actually, like, sit and enjoy the particular chapters and see what else I can get out of it. But there's no way I'd be able to do this during the first read. That's not how, like, especially with most of his stories, I just want to devour it. I'm not okay, guys, remember last week my good thing was the Beneath the Dragon Eye Moons, whatever? I'm finished book 3 already. It was a week. I have read 3 books.
I don't understand how you have all this time to read books. You also play Subnautica.
But that's the thing. Yes, I've been devouring them. Like, whenever I have free time, I'm just sitting around. I pull out my e-reader. I'll just read, you know, 5-10 pages, whatever. So, like, that's what I do for new stories, especially when they grab me. And, yeah, there's no way I'd be able to do 50 pages a week. Just impossible.
Maybe the problem is when I have those 5-10 minute snippets, I just do crossword puzzles. So
there you go.
So it's not Subnautica's fault. It's the New York Times' fault.
There you go.
Anyway, yeah, just Tress was great, but I also didn't have to do that 50 pages at a time. I did that 50 pages at a time when we were recording, but I had already previously read it.
See, but, my usual method is, because, you know, I've already read everything, and I do the 50 pages a week to keep up with us. But this time around, I only just finished Sunlit Man, and I didn't enjoy it enough to read it again. So I'm skipping the 50 pages thing, and I'm having to remember from more than a month ago what it was I read. Just not working out very well. But it's fine. It's fine. We only have to do it for another 6 weeks.
Well, Tori, I only have to remember from a couple of hours ago what I just read, and I mostly fail. Anyway, with all that preamble, let's get to it. Dave, refresh my memory. What happened in the 23rd of The Sunlit Man?
The 23rd?
No, the 23rd.
Yeah, let's find out what happened in this week's chapters and why Mike's so grumpy about having to stop. All right, we got here 26th of the Sunlit, etc. It's like, okay, you know how humans take less time learning to be wizards than elves do? It's like that. Interesting. the less air there is, the less matter there is to conduct heat away from the ship. Nomad has a crush on Elegy. In my homeland, we have a story about someone who got too close to the sun. Me too! His name was Grown-Up Pitt.
Yep.
Ask Craig to explain the Alethi history. And the moral of which story is, don't lie. Party's over.
That's never the moral of which story. That is a foundational aspect of his character. All right, so not sure what this first one is. Again, read this.
No, it's like, okay.
Like, you 2 hours ago.
You know humans take less... All right. So first off, do you understand, like, how humans take less time to become wizards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I get that.
Right, because they have shorter lifespans than elves. So they learn faster, I guess.
But as soon as they become level one and they're able to go out into an adventuring party, then everybody learns at the same rate.
Yeah.
Unless you're in, like, earlier editions of D&D where there were, like, varying experience rates per levels based on class. But even within the same class, human and elf, it didn't matter. You still leveled at the same rate. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, these people are really fast at learning how to be expert engineers because they're always pressured by time to learn faster.
Time? GG.
G.
So go to Dave's Twitch channel, twitch.tv/crossproduct, and type in the word time at some point, and you'll see what we're talking about.
Only while the bot's running.
So wasn't that a thing in Mistborn Era 2 or something where it's like, we need adversity in order to grow? Like,
yeah,
wasn't
it's
that
snap
part
people.
Of the morals?
You need to torture your kids so that they learn how to have magic powers.
I pushed back against this at the time, if you'll remember.
I do remember.
I only read this podcast 50 pages a week, so it's hard for me to keep track of everything. Remind me. I mean, remind the viewers at home. Remind the listeners at home.
All right, we just did.
Sazed was like, I made everything for people too easy. They haven't even discovered the radio yet. And
they still haven't.
Yeah, well, they have, but...
I like to pretend
But they had
haven't.
No reason to do so.
Yes, they did. There were people further away than within voice.
As
man.
We have discussed, they probably should have innovated more. It was just a bit of an excuse, but here we are.
And my argument then is still my argument now. Resource allocation is what actually provides innovation and moving forward with technology.
What about the necessity is the mother of something or other saying?
Of all invention? Yep, that is a saying.
You just disagree with it. Okay. Or is it more nuanced than that?
I mean, it's more nuanced than that, but it's at its core, resource allocation is what actually drives, you know.
Technology. I agree if that's the case, but what is driving resource allocation? There's usually a particular need behind it.
Okay,
so like when the U.S. got into the Cold War, we decided to have the space race. There was a reason for it, and we were throwing money at our space program.
Okay, let's look at this through the lens of this chunk of the Sunlit Man.
Okay.
Okay, there is a need. They need to fly over this mountain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are resources allocated. Even with that incredibly pressing need, even with those resources, without Nomad there to give them the core idea to start from, the need is as much as it can be, right? So we have need all the way top, maxed out. That's not driving invention. Nobody who was there already could have figured this out. They didn't have the concept.
It was Nomad's idea to come here in the first place.
So the problem is that from what we could tell, the Cinder King, his corridor is like right against the mountains. Like if you go south of where his corridor is, mountains.
Yeah.
And I imagine the rebels, they went north. Because why would you go south? There are mountains. So they were hanging out up north, probably scouting in to grab some resources at the time until Cider King became wise to that. So they weren't in position to try to figure out how to get over the mountains. Because you had to get through Cinder King to get to the mountains. And then, of course, you have to experiment. You have to do some tests. You have to figure things out. They were just not in position to do so. Now, Cinder King's group, yeah, maybe they could have figured it out. That's on them. I can't speak for them. But for the rebels, I just don't think they were in position to think about this before. Although it really would have been useful, wouldn't have? Like, if they figured this out earlier, maybe that would have been a good thing to get over the mountains.
In conclusion, necessity is not the mother of invention. It helps a lot, so does resource allocation. But by themselves, they're not it. And I would argue that resource allocation is the bigger factor there. Because even with all that need, and even with Nomad giving them the idea, if they didn't have the fabrication ghosts, and like exclusive access to them during this window when it mattered, still wouldn't have done it. They go splat on a mountain. Anywho.
I disagree, but I think that Nomad sped it up. Like, they would have figured this out. They just wouldn't have figured it out in time to get over the mountain, because they only
Which
had
is not
hours.
Figuring it out. There is no time after the mountain. You either figure it out before the mountain or you die, and there's nothing.
Okay, but given enough time, they would have figured it out if they needed to do it. That doesn't mean that they weren't inventing. That just means that they didn't invent fast enough. But, like, you can say, like, oh, it never got invented because they crashed into a mountain. Well, they were working on it. Or they would have given up and turned into the Cider King because, hey, they didn't need to go over the mountain because they had an alternative. So there you go. But all also, right, next. I'm pretty sure the only reason they came to this corridor was because Nomad talked them into it anyway, with the notion that he would be able to help them out of it.
Well, the going north wasn't an option anymore because they didn't have the resources. They weren't going to get more batteries, I assume.
Cider King forced them south.
Yeah.
All right, next bullet point. It's interesting, the less air there is, the less matter there is to conduct heat away from the ship. I'm so glad that Brandon included this. Just so many space things are just stuck on the space is cold thing, which, sure, there just isn't anything in space to...
transfer heat.
To transfer yeah. heat, so...
In space, no one can hear you steam.
No. That's actually, okay, and then I don't know if it's this chapter or in a couple chapters, they also talk about the sound. There's no sound that's, like, it's very silent, and it's pointed out in the book, so kudos for accuracy there.
Yeah. Anyway, yes.
Right, because sound like heat has to travel through matter.
Yeah.
So yeah, spaceships, made by humans on Earth at least, are designed to actually, like, throw as much heat away as possible, as quickly as possible. And then, if that becomes too much heat gone away, they just run heaters, like internal heaters, to warm things back up. It's, yeah.
Everything makes heat, so it's easy to make heat, but hard to get rid of.
Yeah, heat is just motion.
Yeah, I was watching Mike try to get rid of all that heat on that game he was playing last week. What was it called?
Oxygen not included.
Yeah. So hard to get rid of.
Not really, because in Oxygen Not Included, you can straight up delete heat. It is not a
very complicated the way you were doing it, though.
It is not a physics engine. It is part of a physics engine that ignores a lot of actual physics. Anyway, next up, Nomad has a crush on Elegy.
Well, not I don't think that's the case. Not like romantically, but he admires things about her.
Doesn't he just lock up and sort of? Is physically crush in order to stop her before he puts the cuffs the auxiliary.
Well, that was last time.
He's just like, oh, I can see by the way people talk about her and the way she kept her room and her legacy that, like, she was really driven and cared about furthering her people, and, you know, like, he just admired her. He didn't have, like, a romantic crush on her, but, like, I guess like, I would have a man crush on someone. He had a man crush on Elegy, but since she's not a man, it's not a man crush. So I don't know what the equivalent term for that is, but that kind of crush.
I think man crush is appropriate in this instance.
Or if you take it a couple of steps further, you're into solid bromance territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. In my homeland, we have a story about someone who got too close to the sun. Me too. His name was Grown Up Pitt.
Was anyone waiting for the Icarus to start? And like, wait a minute, Earth isn't in the Cosmere.
I was very curious what his story was going to be. And I'm like, that he doesn't...
It's just like there shouldn't every be an culture. Icarus myth. Every culture has
it's
that
It's like
story.
The gin and tonic. Every culture creates it.
But no, there's no Icarus story. It's just the Alethi are scary metal monsters who build ladders to the sun.
Yeah.
And then ask Craig to explain the Alethi history. Go for it, Craig.
Yeah.
I don't know what you want me to explain.
All of
the
it.
Stories right
the
there.
The Alethi history. It says Alethi, in the bullet point.
Alethi are violent. They want to take things over. They were tired of losing to Sazed.
To the Giants.
Nomad. Sigzel. Azish? Sigzel. Yeah, Azish people. I just want to make sure I say sigil correctly, because you don't like when I say sigil.
Oh, we like it very much, actually. We laugh every time.
But apparently Alethi were not doing too well. And I suspect there's more to the story than, of course, what Nomad tells us. If you take a look at the map of Roshar, there's a lot of mountains and stuff in the way. And I've noticed that the Alethi, while they're very good and warlike, when you start getting away from their homeland, it becomes more and more difficult for them to win. They're very good, but when you have to factor in terrain and supplies, it just doesn't work.
You don't have to factor in supplies.
Yeah, I guess you could just pillage.
No.
Soulcasters.
They have soulcasters, yeah.
Soulcasters. Okay.
The thing they don't have is ready reinforcements.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so they were losing, and the Alethi are like, I want to take over the sun, which I'm sure is a metaphor for something. I don't know what, but...
I'm sorry, excuse me one moment. You know what would really help with that soul cast grain? Some onion powder.
Yum.
Oh, no.
Where do you get the onions?
They flew too close to the sun and got burned, you know?
I don't know. I'm sure there's some onion-like rock bud kind of gross ground plant you can smash someone over the head with it.
They could have root vegetables, I guess. They would be... protected from the storms.
I mean, they do have root vegetables. We see Kid Kaladin make a huge mess out of them
mm-hmm.
by not cleaning them properly and peeling them and then having to clean them again.
I'm going to see if the copper mine has anything extra on this, though. This is chapter 26, yeah?
Yes. So anyway, because Nomad doesn't like his stories to have morals, because Wit loves his stories to have morals, I think he cut out some of the bits that would have given it a moral.
There's got to be a moral to this story. I feel like there should be. I don't know. That's all I got. I just feel like in the case of Wit, there always is a moral. And you know there's a moral, even if he says there is no moral. But in this case, Nomad's like, no, this is just a story for fun. But no, is there really? Like, it's a don't fly too close to the sun sort of thing. Like I just said, which is the moral.
But he cut out the bits that made that relevant. And the moral of Wit's story is don't lie. No, the moral of Wit's story is always lie, and also don't give your flute to a bridgeman. Just don't do it.
But the moral is don't lie, because he's lying about the existence of the moral. So he's lying moral-wise.
Party's over.
Pack it in. We had fun, but it's time to go.
All right, end of the book. Bye, everybody.
Yep,
no,
the book party is concluded. Oh, I've discovered more pages on the scroll here.
So the problem is, if I look up the Taggart, which is what the Alethi are called in that story, it just goes to the Alethi in the copper mine. So, yeah, who knows? It's just Alethi have a long history. Lots of conquering.
Chapter 27. The plan should work if nothing goes wrong. Good thing Murphy is on vacation. This is where Frankenstein code comes from.
Nomad actually thinks loud enough for the book to pick up to himself that they have plenty of time if everything goes smoothly, which just don't do that. Just don't do that. Don't say it out loud. Don't think it. Just don't do that.
Look, if you're a character in a book, never think that thought.
And just in case you are and you don't know it, also don't think that.
Similarly, avoid great the phrase advice. What else can go wrong?
Mm-hmm. Not true.
There's a whole section on this in Mage Errant.
That's one of the things I like about Mage Errant is that we have I'm a sucker for any time there's a self-aware character, you know, be it in some movie or in this case a book. I like that. I'm like, they are aware and they're gonna say this sort of thing. They're gonna point it out. And therefore, we're going to get a better story because the characters aren't going to make the same mistakes, except when they do, and then it's funny.
This character in question does not think that the world is itself a book, or that she is a character in a book. She just assumes that the world runs on the same rules as the bad books that she reads. And she is more often than not right.
Yep.
Because she is a character in a book. This is where Frankenstein code comes from. Nomad gets, or they test out more stuff. They build three engines, two of them explode, one doesn't. And Nomad's like, good enough. We go with this one. We just implement some quick fixes. We do not worry about making this actually better. Just functional for right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
that's just good code.
Craig, that's... Craig, buddy, that's your job.
He would know, right?
When you have a deadline of like a week, you're going to just go with this works. You're not going to optimize it. I still have, okay, I'll be honest. I have code that I wrote, you know, a year ago that is still not optimized because it's like, hey, I'll get to it later. It works. It passes the test. We're good. It's just a little inefficient, but I haven't had time to go back to it because I'm working on some other feature instead.
And this is how you get Slay the Spire spaghetti code.
Oh, I hate that guy. He changes his action every time you attack him, and then he can give you that spore curse.
Presumably, Slay the Spire 2 was like, hey, guys, we made a giant mess of things, and let's redo it from the ground up and actually make it work this time.
That's also one of the problems of Final Fantasy 14. It's built on top of the Final Fantasy 14 1.0 spaghetti code. They did as much as they could to, you know, rip it out, build a new engine, everything, but they're still hampered by it. Which is why it took them forever to add two dies to each piece of equipment.
And not even every piece of equipment has two dies. So my problem with Final Fantasy XIV is just that it's not responsive. Like, when I take an action or push a button on my controls, I want that to happen when I push the button. And I want what happens on screen, I want it to be actually happening in-game at the same time I see it on screen. There's like a two-second latency between seeing something and it actually happened in the world of the game.
Everything's based on the GCD, and there's still a delay because of what you show, what you see visually. It doesn't matter. It's whatever the time, whatever the cast bar, whatever the action bar is showing you, and there's still like a half second or something when it's about to end. Like, you could input something, and thanks to, you know, I guess latency, it will go through. So you learn to clip your actions. Like, if you're, you know, skilled at the game, you start learning, like, when you can start pressing things. Like, typically I'm spam pressing a button until I know it takes. But again, I'll start about a half a second before the previous cast bar or whatever is done.
That's not exclusive to FF14, because you can queue GCD spells, like, in every game. Like, you don't have to push it right when it comes up. There's always kind of like a half second window when one ability is like still casting. Like, that's pretty standard. And actually, FF14 is designed around weaving. There aren't really instant cast spells in the game. My problem is that the tooltips on them are misleading. But you can basically on each GCD, you can get theoretically should be able to get two inter GCD spells.
Right.
OGCD. And I've really been enjoying the recent Savage tier with the Arcadian. Like, it's the first Savage tier of Dawn Trail. It's been a lot of fun, but there's this one mechanic in the second fight where it's like a bullet hell and there's just hearts flying around the screen. The way the fight's like coordinated, if you get hit by a single one of these hearts, the boss is gonna heal and get a like boosted damage for the entire rest of the fight.
Wait, and all eight players have to avoid
all eight
these?
Players have to avoid all these
oh
hearts
my
flying across.
Gosh.
So it's an eight-player bullet hell, but you have to dodge basically like 2 seconds ahead of when the heart is actually gonna get you.
I can hear the arguments from here. It's like, Steve, you messed up again. Oh.
Final Fantasy XIV has been fun, but I hate when the game thinks it's a genre that it's not. Like, hey guys, we can be a platformer, we can be a bullet hell. Like, no, you're an MMO, just be an MMO.
Well, no, it's I like when they add those things in if they're forgiving. So, like, the leap of faith is fun. They give you a 10-minute timeout. It's something new, it's something different. When we did some of those, I forget what dungeons we did at the end of Stormblood or everything, and started adding like these different mechanics to the bosses, I'm like, this is new and refreshing. But, you know, you mess up, you're okay. It's not going to be end of the world. The problem is when you're doing Savage Raids, there is no room for error. Like, it's this is the hardest content that we currently have. You need to play perfectly. Eventually, it will be tuned and it'll be much easier.
There are a handful of solo duties that you have to do along the main story quest that I felt were kind of unfair and too punishing. And fortunately, if that happens, you can restart it and just put it on easy mode. Like, I don't need to prove anything and beat this, like, thing in normal mode or whatever. Like, whatever. I'm just trying to get through this story.
Anyway, we should get back on track. My whole point is that spaghetti code is a thing that exists and it's really hard to get rid of.
Spaghetti code, that's what I meant. What did I call it?
Frankenstein code.
Yeah.
That's let me piece together these different things into something that works, which is also what we do. Copy and paste is our friend.
Stack Overflow. Don't mind if I do.
All right, so what does young Frankenstein code look like, Craig?
It just has a little bit of sarcasm. Frankenstein. And...
It's like there's a button you push that causes the horses to whinny and the thunder to roll.
Why did he correct the first syllable's pronunciation and make it more German, but then incorrect the last syllable?
Why not?
I know the point is that he was trying to distance himself from Victor?
From his ancestor, yeah.
Yeah.
Chapter 28.
Chapter 28 of the Sun. Spike, auxiliary, is glad he changed.
Did the chapters get shorter?
Chapter 26 was very long this week. Like, the bulk, half of our reading time was in chapter 26.
Oh, there's just no bullet points.
I think at some point in here, it may have been 27, we get the first viewing of the Night Brigade. They show up in the system in a spaceship.
Yay.
That some kid's like, that's a new
star. It's a new star. Hey, look, a new star.
I think that might have been right at the end of 27.
Well, you mentioned Spike, so yeah. This is when we're talking about them.
Ox is, I think in this chapter, thinking about and talking about how the Night Brigade operate, and they have corpses that they use as soldiers, which I don't think we've ever seen that before, right? Like, that's brand new.
I'm taking it as either they're lifeless or they're some kind of, like, weird quasi-inquisitor, whatever, those dudes.
Steel Inquisitor.
Except not alive.
Inquisitioner, no, you got it. You got it the first
time. No one expects the Steel Inquisition.
them. That's my interpretation of what they might.
I was thinking lifeless.
I was also thinking lifeless, but then he also mentions that what they would likely do to him is torture him to death and put him in a spike and use that to track down the person he gave the Dawn Shard to, and if they don't still have it, then do the same and continue, etc., etc.
Was that it? Yeah. I thought they were spiking him to get his soul juice out, so his soul juice would be in the spike, so that they could use that spike with that would have the knowledge.
Right, he has a connection to the Dawn Shard, and they would be able to use that connection in a spike to follow it to, I guess, the next holder of the Dawn Shard.
Anyone else think of that REO Speedwagon song?
Which one?
About the
shards? I often think of many REO Speedwagon songs. You're going to have to narrow it down.
Wait, he's going to pull it up. Hold on.
Take It on the Run, it's called.
Yeah, that works. Anyway, this is also the chapter where Nomad does his test run up the mountain, which actually works quite well. He takes his little bike and tries to keep it on just the regular thrusters for as long as he can, switches over to the steam thruster. It works great. He parks on top, has himself a little silent conversation with Ox, and all he can add to it is rough emotions that he projects, where Ox just talks to him, and he can't talk back, and Ox is very happy about this, he said monotonously.
A captive audience.
Hey, he's not a cryptic.
It's like all of our listeners, they just have to listen to us speak. They can't stop our podcast ever.
But they can put it on 2x speed, so...
I like 1.5. 1.5 is good. At 2x, we all sound like the same voice.
At 2x, you all sound like me.
Yeah, like everyone's voice just merges into one thing. It's impossible to tell who's who, except by like cadence and then word choice. I often edit at 2x speed, or close to it, because I don't need to know who says what. Anyway, yeah, Ox is like, hey, you can't talk back, so I'm going to bring up topics that you always tell me not to bring up. Like, hey man, remember that time when you met the Night Brigade? Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? They almost killed you and you were an idiot. Anyway, I'm glad I died. The end.
Yep. Chapter 29. Talky bits. Ox is a replacement conscience. Not enough water. The jettison Kajigger is jammed.
Kajigger.
Go ahead, Mike. Talky bits.
You know, you guys all know what talky bits means. I don't even have to go into that.
Yeah, they're talking and...
That's what we're doing right now.
No, this is probably Nomad's conversation with Elegy.
Yeah.
Where she's like, hey, I want to fight everyone. And then like, hey,
Is she asking for a challenge?
Like, she just wants to fight everybody. Listen, in another universe, she would be Goku, and it would be great.
I was going for Stinko, man.
But then Nomad's like, if you did, then you would die on top of this mountain. Start having a little bit of long-term planning. Just a little.
And she's all like, well, what's your long-term plan? And he's like, I'm just running. Like, that doesn't sound like a very good long-term plan. I agree. But yeah, she gets Nomad thinking about things that he's been trying not to think about that Ox has apparently been trying to poke him toward and has been doing a terrible job. And Ox is like, hey, she's a better conscience than I am. And Nomad's like, you're not my conscience. And Ox is like, well, you used to have one, and then you got rid of her, and then you got me, and I never actually met her, so.
Is she an honor spren?
She was an honor spren. And we get confirmation from Ox that he used to be a high spren before he got killed-ed.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay.
I was going to make a note of that, but then I thought that we had already figured that out anyway.
I mean,
we
did. I figured it out. I don't know about you guys.
I probably just told you by accident.
Well, we also figured it out using bits and pieces from the book up to that point.
I forget why he wasn't an honor spren, though.
There was, like, some reference to honor spren. Like, so you could tell that honor spren were at least different and not what he was. And you could fly, and there's only two spren that can do that, that grant those surges. Wax take notes, this is how you do deduction.
But also, Wax take additional notes. Don't deduct something and then immediately hold on to that as like, the core truth that you build your entire character around. Leave it open to adjustment at some point in the future if you learn more things.
Scientific method.
Now, Mike, that's great advice for somebody who's not a Skybreaker.
Wax isn't a Skybreaker.
Okay, it's great advice for Wax, but not Sigzel.
But Wax would make a good Skybreaker.
Well, so. Sigzel isn't a Skybreaker.
Well, he used to be.
Well, he isn't now. Now he's a guy who runs away from the Night Brigade.
He didn't follow your advice. He did follow your advice, which is the problem, because the Skybreaker's whole deal is to start with a premise and build everything around that. I'm going to get my Skybreaker kit soon, guys. When do they ship those out?
Oh, that was 3 years ago? 2 years ago? When was Secret? Okay, hold on. Secret projects. That was, he wrote those in 2020. Mm-hmm. The Kickstarter was in 2021 and released in 2022, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. There you
go. No, I'm talking about the Words of Radiance Leatherbound. I don't think it was Kickstarter. It was a different organization.
Oh, I don't think I updated my
that thing
address. I gotta do that.
Yeah, they kept asking me to update my address, and 3 months later, I finally did it. But I still didn't get my plushy high spren and my Skybreaker starter kit.
Guys, guess what?
What?
We are a couple of days away from the 2-year anniversary of this book being released.
Wow!
Wow!
Isn't that exciting?
Very exciting.
And this is currently what we have.
Anyway, everything goes badly.
That wasn't supposed to happen. Didn't you read my notes? Mm-hmm. Murphy was on vacation.
Nomad's like, hey, this place is dragging a little bit and not going up nearly as quickly as it was supposed to. And then he realizes that he has an Iron Man icing problem.
That's all right. The cold never bothered Nomad anyway.
So he manages to get rid of one empty water tank that he was supposed to have done when it got empty. Like, dude, part of this is just on you for not paying attention and, like, getting rid of the unnecessary weight when you were supposed to do it. Then he goes to get rid of another tank that is also empty, and it doesn't go anywhere.
That's Ox's job. He's the alarm clock. Okay, Google, remind me to empty the water when we're done with it.
Hey, Siri, Set alarm. Oh, auxiliary. Gosh. 5 minutes.
No one's going to listen to us, and we're like, okay.
Anyway, it's jammed. And we find out in the next chapter why.
It's full of jam.
Well, too bad that's the last chapter of the week.
Only one man is man enough to give me the raspberry.
Lone Star.
Auxiliary is only mostly dead. I thought the... Wait, I already said that. I forgot to not say it again. Ice stuff. That's much better than the other thing I wrote. Nomad night-blooded ox before? Underwear locks are harder to undo. Sorted! What goes up must come down. Right? Choke sunlight. There it goes. This is like the opposite of a chasm hanger. What would you even call that?
A mesa stander.
Suspender. How about mesa suspender?
Also, side note, we just watched Inside Out 2, and there's that sarcasm part in the middle, and I thought chasm hanger instead of sarcasm. I understand what they were going for, but that is what my brain did.
Thanks, Mike.
I also watched Inside Out 2 pretty recently. It just made it to Disney Plus. And there's a fairy princess.
I don't see no tiara.
Oh, she is a fairy princess.
I see
Look
a hanger.
That outfit.
She has, yep.
That's adorable.
It's a rainbow unicorn, but you don't see the unicorn.
That's
part.
A beautiful outfit.
Hello, Ada.
Hi. I can wave straight
colors.
Ahead now.
Ada, where's your unicorn horn?
Guys, this is a game changer. I can wave straight ahead.
No.
I don't have to wave over here.
Oh, yeah. You need that.
And okay.
Away she goes.
Back to stuff.
Exactly what she was thinking. Back to stuff.
Yeah.
Ox is only mostly dead. As established, Ox still has a little bit of ox juice to him. Not enough to do most stuff, but he can still be oxy. And Nomad has to... Nomad declunks the top clasps that are holding the water tank in place.
The kajigger. But
the bottoms are also frozen on, so he has to go climb around underneath the ship to get at the bottom ones to knock it loose. And when he does that, he almost dies, and Ox is like, hey, if you kill me the rest of the way, all the way dead, then you could fly for a second.
At first, I was thinking...
At first, I was afraid. I was petrified.
Hi, Ada.
And yes, the fairy princess is now back and is also a unicorn.
Yes. It's beautiful.
So at first I was thinking, wait, didn't Nomad say that the cold wasn't going to be a problem? But it was a completely different issue. It was cold getting mechanism stuck, not stuff too cold to fire off jets.
Yeah, they went up really high. It was still cold near the top. And ice. Ice is bad.
The problem is that they were accelerating slower than he was counting on, which means they spent more time in the cold zone.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah.
But hey, they make it up to a high enough altitude that they can bask in the sunlight, which isn't lethal.
We'll get there.
Whoa.
Nomad goes grapple beaming across the underside of the ship with Ox as... the grapple beam, but he almost slips, and Ox is like, hey, wait, instead of dying here, what if you fly a little bit and kill me? And Nomad's like, nope, and then just keeps grapple beaming. It turns out that everything was fine and there actually wasn't a problem, but then he turns Ox, he gets to the water tank, he turns Ox into a long enough lever to shift the world, but his angle is bad and it doesn't work, so he's like, I need a shard blade. He's like, I can't make a shard blade because that's a weapon. But no, it's a tool. What if it's a tool? Hey, brain, it's a tool. Not a weapon, it's a tool. And he can for just a second long enough to cut the thing free.
Stole that idea from Dalinar.
And the water tank goes kablooey. And Nomad climbs back up. And they just barely make it above the top of the mountain. And then all the water is gone and they have no thrust anymore. But that doesn't matter because now they're in the sunlight. And it's fine. The light from the sun isn't actually the thing that makes it all super deadly. So what does? I don't know. Neither does Nomad. I bet Craig and Tori do, though.
No.
Chasm hanger.
And then, yeah, as we think about this, the ship starts coming back down, but with no thrust to be able to slow it down, we are barreling down the much steeper other side of the mountain. End of chapter.
End mountain of week. Sitter instead of chasm hanger.
It's okay, though, because surely everyone will crash and die. That's where we're going, right?
Mike, everyone crashes and dies. This is the end of the book. There are no more pages after
this.
That's
how you know everyone crashed and died.
Yeah. So what do you guys think will happen?
You guys ever read Starship Troopers?
I still haven't watched that.
Really?
But read it. I'm asking about the book.
I also haven't read it.
No, I haven't read
it. Okay. Well, Dave, you haven't weighed in. Have you read Starship Troopers?
I didn't even know it was a book.
Okay. The book ends kind of suddenly. The last mission that Johnny Rico goes on is successful and everything's great. And then there's not really a conclusion. And word of author is that the next mission he went on, he died, which is why we didn't get to see that one. So
makes sense.
So I assume that's a similar thing to what's happening here.
Okay.
Because Brandon is nothing if not a thief of other authors that came before him, as so many authors are.
Dave, would you like tell us your
thoughts? Cookie? Oh, huh?
All right. I have some bullet points.
Okay.
Chapter you got to fill in from last week, too. Wait.
Do you want last week's? Because there's a lot of them.
Well, why didn't you give them to us last week?
You said you were going to do last week's.
No, you said you guys wanted me to do last week's. I said we were already at an hour and a half. I will graciously end it.
Well,
I
we're
think
not
for
at an hour and a half
week,
now.
let me hold on. There might be a couple good ones from last week.
Dave just Hang added on. A new bullet point.
Craig, before you get into yours, I need you to read Dave's final bullet point for the week.
I'm going to go get more mac and cheese. okay, so for last week, I highlighted stuff related to the Dawn Shard. We got some information about that. The ability to feed on a vesture. Strange connection. Okay, I do want to read this one. Okay, the torment. That's the torment. The strange connection I have to all places at once. The ability to feed on investiture. The ability to skip from location to location. But also the curse of not being able to fight back. A Dawn Shard is one of the primal forces of creation. And is the one we carry. And the one we carried is diametrically opposed to the concept of violence and harm. The scar tissue on my soul has the same intent. That same requirement of its host. That I be unable to harm anyone at all for any reason. And then also talking about the Dawn Shard, so long as he retained that connection, he was a link to whoever held it now, and so long as he could locate one of the, the most powerful weapons in all of the Cosmere, people would hunt him. I think that's relevant for this week's chapters.
Wait, are you suggesting that a Dawn Shard is one of the most powerful weapons in the Cosmere?
I'm not suggesting it, that's what the book told us.
I don't think that's true.
Can you think of any other powerful weapon in the Cosmere, Mike?
All sorts of them. Nightblood, yeah. And then just like regular shard blades and guns. Naj's ghost gun with the runes.
Oh, man.
And then this is also, I think, chapter 22.
Oh, wait. Sorry. One more. Wax's big gun. The big gun.
Mm-hmm.
The big gun. Vindication. Oh, we'll call this one the big gun. Talking about the chorus, I think they're building it like I build things for myself, Auxiliary said. You've seen this before, you use it every day, Nomad. So the 3D printing is how the Spren makes its, I guess it's crafting its body into a tool or weapon. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, keep going.
I guess I didn't have that many. There were a few others, I'm just, again, I'm looking for interesting ones. So chapter 26. They came from the east, Nomad said in the local tongue, so contemplation could understand. Giants in armor, forged of the deepest metals, a horde of death and destruction that ate the land, consumed villages like insects swarming the crops, ripping, smashing. They called themselves the Alethi, but we knew them as the Terrarut. The breakers, it means. Those who leave only death. The Alethi. And then after the story, contemplation here. I should like, she whispered, to live my remaining days in a place where we could afford to tell such stories. A place with no running. A place of peace and whimsy. I understand, he said.
Oh yeah, I also noticed the whimsy thing.
It's lowercase w.
Still, I think it's going somewhere.
I forgot it.
Maybe not in this book, but I think that's where we're eventually going with at least some people.
And right before the artwork, they're called the Night Brigade. Distant cousins of yours, actually. They're here to kill me.
So does that mean they're Threnodites? I wasn't clear on that.
That seems to be the intention. That they're... Because they're also... The Threnodites are described as cousins before, earlier in the book. But apparently the Night Brigade... might but be Threnodites.
Distant cousins? Maybe they're distant before cousins. The even older than modern Threnodites.
Okay. Chapter 27. They're talking about ad nauseum, bless your flight sort of thing. And Nomad's like, I'll settle, he said, for no gods intentionally thwarting me for once. She seemed troubled by that statement as well. She should. So what god thwarted Sigzel?
Sazed.
No.
Boyd.
Yes.
Don't you dare. You think it is? Oh, so you're saying Sazed was the one who thwarted him?
Yeah. Why
not? Are you trying to confuse me?
Sounds like the sort of thing he would do.
That guy loves thwarting people.
Yeah, I was going to say, he doesn't do much of anything because he can't.
At least he hires other people to do it.
No, so, like, is this a thing that Odium, thwarted him at one point? Or could this be a hint that cultivation is up to something?
It's
not honor.
Hold on, I want to pitch something to you. Sazodium.
Oh no.
Oh my gosh. So we know it's not honor because honor is dead. Unless Dalinar or someone picked up the pieces and reformed the shard, but why would they thwart Sigzel? Like I don't see that as a thing. I think it's either Odium, just being the obvious, like, okay, he's the big bad, even still, or maybe cultivation, because I think she's up to something. Okay. I will continue on to my next one then. Oh, and then, okay. My kind were too static for too long, particularly we high spren. And then my last one, chapter 29. You threw out your conscience years ago. I know. Though I never had a chance to meet her. That left the position vacant regardless, so I appointed myself to fill it. So this is the timeline. He had a bond with an honor spren, and apparently he threw it out. Whatever that means, broke the bond. Something else happened, we don't know. And then he formed the bond with a high spren. That is a significant time. Like,
okay. We have established already that at some point in the past, Sigzel broke at least one oath.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
That is established. Isn't that an explanation enough for what happened to his honor spren, theoretically?
Yeah. That's fair.
Especially if he also, went and joined a different order. Afterward?
So we've gotten words of Brandon, which isn't exactly canon in the book yet, that you can bond multiple spren at the same time. And they can be in different orders. Some orders work better with others. They can work together. But that's clearly not the case. That's not what we had. He was bonding an honor spren.
Honor spren don't work with any of them. Like, they all hate honor spren, right? And we established that.
Not everybody, but yeah, most other spren do, yes.
I think specifically Cryptics and High Spren are mentioned as being at odds with Honor Spren.
Like, somehow the Cryptics are, like, kind of isolated, but overall still in very good standing with the rest of Spren society.
It's because they like math.
Which is odd, because they are weird little maniacs.
They appreciate a good truth. They say they like lies, but really, they like truths.
They are some bizarre little gremlins.
All right. So I don't think we're going to see any of this in the next book. There's just not enough time. From what we were told, we get, like, what, a week? Maybe 10 days? I guess that is a Rosharan week. As far as we know.
That's the setup. That might get solved in the first two sections, and then we move on from there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, I went into Stormlight expecting Wheel of Time pacing, and whoo, buddy.
Yeah.
We are on a roller coaster, if that is your baseline.
One of the things I like is that all the books can, like, stand on their own. And it's not like, oh, you need to absolutely read these other ones and remember every single little thing. Like, there's a lot that happens in each book. So I will enjoy each book as they come out.
That has gotten a little less true, basically starting in Era 2. Like, everything written from Era 2 on is... You don't have to read the other Cosmere stuff, but you're missing out on some things. Maybe not anything important, but you're definitely missing out on some stuff.
There's a lot of connections between them. But I just mean, for Stormlight Archives, the books are distinct. Like, specifically for those books. Each book is distinct. There's a huge, like, typically there's character arcs. There is a huge story arc for each book. And that's nice. So they're distinct. I should say that they're distinct. Not that you can enjoy them on their own, because as you point out, Mike, no, there's a lot of connections between the books now. Especially Sunlit Man, I think, is a good indication that this is probably the most Cosmere-centric book that we have read so far. Maybe barring Seeker History. But in terms of novel, yeah, absolutely. Anyway, that's it for my bullet points.
Neat. Anybody else got anything? Do we want to do a spoiler time?
Nah, good.
Okay, then I think that's it. So bye, everybody.
Good night, Internet.
Good night, Internet.
Good night.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.